Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and 30-year business coach. Listen in as amazing, world-changing authors, speakers, and coaches share their struggles and victories, and hear from best-selling authors' insight into how you, too, can live your life as a thriving entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur. Thanks for being with me here today as we talk about urgent clarity. What are the things that aren't just maybes, but they're absolutes? And how do we get clear enough about what's really, truly important when we feel that impending sense, that deep internal sense of urgency? How do we know where to spend our energy? Do you know what it's like when you feel something inside? You know it. You feel it deeply. It's an urgency inside of you, but you don't know exactly how to act on it. You don't know exactly what are the right steps, what are the clues inside of this feeling that I have that allow me to be able to break out, to go from whatever I've been doing to something that really shows up and makes a powerful difference in the world. That's urgent clarity. And when you feel that, you absolutely have to find a way to act on it, not just maybe, not just if, not sometime, but right now. That urgency, you need to be clear. You need to understand very clearly who you are, what you were meant to do, and what's truly important. And then take all of your skills, and rather than just staying in the vein that you were in, really truly moving out into the space that you're not just hoping to be part of, but that you're literally called to be in, that is the reason you were created to do, and the place that you can make a true impact on the world. I have three amazing guests, and they're taking this from three very different levels, but actually, in the end, what they're really all talking about is that sense of urgent clarity and how when they knew what they knew they needed to do, they acted on it, and how you too can learn from what they did. Rather you work with them or you do something else, you can use your urgent clarity to be a thriving entrepreneur. And with that said, let's jump right in to our first guest. Join me in welcoming Preston Eli. Hey, Preston, how you doing today?
Great. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, so glad to have you here with us. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
A little bit about me and how I show up in the world. You want to start when I was 2 years old, or where should we start?
What do you do in the world, and how are you impacting the world? What kind of things are you doing?
I help mainly Christian entrepreneurial men make spectacular midlife comebacks. And I also do my best to keep them from ever having to make that comeback in the first place, which is not all that possible, but we're trying to make it possible.
I absolutely love that. So in order to have a comeback, you have to have a setback or a fall down or a whatever got you to need to come back. Is it pretty varied, or are there some typical things that you're helping people do so that they won't need a comeback?
Yeah. So it's divorce, it's addictions, it all basically stems from what I've seen and in my own experience from this vocational identity crisis that most high performing men face in the middle of their lives. Normally, after they've achieved some measure of success, a lot of these guys, including myself, we've had these goals and it our whole life, right? And I'm not talking about goals like I'm going to make $2 million, or I'm going to be a billionaire. It's not like that. It's more of a subconscious goal. It's more of a lot of it is probably a little too deep to go into, but it's the subconscious. I'm going to do the opposite of what I witnessed when I was growing up. I'm going to, a lot of it is anger and fear-based. And once that goal has been achieved, you know, the whole kill your mentors, you know, beat your dad project, Freudian concept. Once that goal's been achieved, and this all happens kind of subconsciously, a man is sitting there wondering why, where has my passion gone, my fire, my drive? Why does none of this stuff satisfy anymore? And the longer that goes on, the longer that question mark, the longer there is a question mark in terms of identity, in terms of purpose. I mean, it all really comes down to purpose. Men f lose their sense of purpose. And if they're not surrounded by the right people that can see into their lives and into their situation super clearly, it could just spiral very quickly.
And I know there's so much more involved in it than we can get into in 10 or 15 minutes, but what are some key or the key thing that a person needs to do to stop that spiral and start moving back in an upward trajectory?
Yeah. So what I have found is super helpful is, well, so like on a on just a fundamental, foundational, like practical level, you need to have coaching in a context of community with like-minded brotherhood. You need people around you to support you and that are wise enough to help you see yourself. Now that's like that sounds simple enough, but I mean I can count on one hand the number of guys, well, I mean the before starting Comeback Kings anyways, that I had like that. They were wise, strong, and could see me for who I really was. They could see through all the BS, they could see through the facades, the masks, the lies, and they just continue to support you and help you to see what is really going on. So like the first thing that's super helpful is for somebody to actually see the picture clearly and kind of be able to reframe what it is that's going on in their life, right? There needs to be like some frame of meaning. Like, why is this happening to me? Why am I feeling like this? Is anybody else feeling like this? Am I the only one? A lot of these guys feel like they are alone, and they don't really have anybody that they can talk to about it. Being around people who can help you understand the dynamics of the situation, that is the first thing. It's like the most helpful thing is to know that there's meaning in your suffering, that just because you failed doesn't mean that you're a failure, that there's meaning to your failure, and that there's meaning beyond just simply learning from what you did and using that to keep climbing the ladder even higher. What you need is men wise enough to know that you need to get rid of the freaking ladder. All right, so that leads kind of into the heart of the problem, which is that men who are climbing the ladder of success, and that ladder has moved from the corporate world to the entrepreneurial world for the most part. Right. And that's just going to keep getting more and more true as time goes on. Nobody really stops to think about what is at the top of that ladder. I have been there and I'm here to report back that there is absolutely nothing. There are more ladders to more nothingness, and you can keep spinning your wheels in that whole insane success cycle if you want. The better you are at managing that whole game. Right? If you're blessed, if you're lucky, God will arrange things so you are not quite so good at managing that game. And he'll let it all fall apart all around you so that you can figure out, see for yourself firsthand what life actually is all about and who you actually are. And you will come back to your senses, you will come back to your true self in Christ. You will come back to reality. You will come back to being a freaking normal human being. The need to be freaking like some superhuman, right? Which is what everybody's trying to do right now. They're trying to be. So the last podcast I was just on was called The Superhuman Life. It was a great podcast and the host is freaking awesome. And it's not really totally about what I'm, the context that I'm using here. But have you kind of noticed, Steve, that trend that, like, you know, bulletproof, there's that one guy out there who's trying to defy mortality and live until AI gets us to the point where we can live forever. We're trying to become gods. And that is, we're not, right? We're human beings in need of God. And it's this midlife transitional crisis that honestly, a lot of guys get stuck at and they never move forward past it. I almost didn't. I almost did not survive if it was not for the couple of mentors and the community that just happened to get blessed to be around when it did happen. I simply would not be here. And then I came of kind of came, you know, just the everything kind of fell into place to where I kind of just developed a system to figure out who I am, what the world wants from me, what God wants from me, what is my major, my, as Napoleon Hill said, my major, definite major purpose in life. Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? And, you know, what am I called to do? Right? Profit has got to be, it's got to come down the value chain to, it's got to be underneath purpose, right? Once you get to midlife, preferably earlier, but it seems like midlife, it becomes imperative. We have got to be chasing purpose. And when you do that, when you make the main thing, secondary things come with it. Right? That's a C.S. Lewis quote, who wrote Narnia, which I see right behind you. Now that I'm looking at this thing. Are you a fan of Chronicles of Narnia?
Oh, I love C.S. Lewis. Been reading him since I was a little kid. Yeah, absolutely.
You and me both. I read the whole entire Chronicles of Narnia. I read every single book he wrote, and his best quote is, what is that quote? Do you know that quote? I'm trying to remember it, Steve. It's, if you make the first things, aim for the first primary things, and secondary things get thrown in with it. Aim for secondary things and you get nothing. So in this context of what I'm talking about here, it's aim, make your goal, make your, what you're chasing. First of all, God, but God and purpose, vocation, voice, calling. There, it's identity. This is all an identity thing. It's all very intertwined, right? So pursue purpose over profit, and profit will come along for the ride.
Sounds like you read my book, even though I know you haven't yet.
What is it?
Totally. It's actually called How Can I Help You Today? And it's a complete reimagining of the whole concept of in business. And,
oh, wow.
You know, completely redoing the thing of the, you know, and then we do such and such for people and then they'll feel like they owe us something. And it's like, no, if we're giving for any other reason other than just to give and out of heart of generosity,
dude,
we've already lost.
Dude, you are speaking my language. I'm actually about to put a post on Instagram. Check my Instagram later this afternoon and you will see a post that starts off with a Mother Teresa quote that says, there's never been a good deed done with 100% pure intention ever in the history of man. And then I go on to talk about motive and attention. Why are we trying to build our brands? Why are we posting every day on social media? For what's the reason, right? And then I just kind of get into like true motive. Are we doing this? Are we doing this to help people? Or are we doing this for selfish reasons, right? And if we're honest with ourselves, it's both, right? And it's just a matter of degree. I'd like to read your book, bro.
Yeah, I'll make sure I get you a copy of it here after we're
Yeah.
done.
Well, I'll get it out there.
But
I'll get it out to my community and everyone social.
I love it. Well, yeah, I mean, it's so important that we understand who we are and whose we are. You said both of those. And then what we're really here to do in the world. You know, it's really not going to make any difference in this
You'd
world
be miserable until
if,
you do.
yeah. Yeah, well, and it doesn't matter how much money. I love it. A good friend of mine, his name was Errol Abramson, a multi-billionaire, but he said, you know, you get to the place where you've spent all the money, you bought all the clothes, you've driven all the cars, you've flown in all the planes. He goes, and you realize that none of it means anything. He goes,
That's called
only
cliff
what
top.
impact.
That's
Yeah.
called cliff top, mountaintop. There's rock bottom and then there's mountaintop. And that's where you get to the top and realize there is nothing there. And that is so freaking pain. It's even more. I've been to both. I've been to the bottom and I've been to the top. And when I say the bottom, I'm talking, I've actually been to the bottom, to the top, to the bottom again, and to a bottom that was even worse than the first bottom. I had $2 million a year passive income, family, five businesses, mansion on the water. I had it all. And it took me about 5 years of this vocational identity crisis, the pain of not knowing what I'm really supposed to be doing, who I really am, why I'm here. It took about 5 years of that, of wrestling with that to lose absolutely everything. Absolutely everything, to the point of homelessness. Literally.
Yeah, I
Not just
completely
homeless, not just
understand.
homelessness, like living in the back of my car. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a dollar. Those are the stakes. Those are the stakes. And so when you're at the top, it would be really, really a smart idea to, number one, don't think you're above what I'm describing to you right now. Because I would have told you the same thing. Yeah, right. You're telling me I'm gonna put. There's not a chance in the world. I've read 1,000 books. I've been doing this for 25 years. I've been this, that, this. God doesn't care. The devil will destroy you if given the permission. And knowing that, it would be pretty freaking a good idea to put in some backstops. Get community, get coaches, get a group of guys around you that you can get real with. This is like resonating, Steve. This makes is this am
Oh,
I talking
absolutely.
nonsense or?
Oh, no. You are right on track. In fact, tell us, please, how does a person become a part of Comeback Kings? What kind of stuff do you do in that community?
So I don't. I'm pretty selective on who I let. This is a relatively new brand. Launched this earlier this year. So right now, I'm only working with high performing, normally Christian entrepreneurs in an intimate setting. We do group coaching twice a week. Sometimes I work with guys one on one, depending on what their situation is. So I kind of just have. I come from the marketing world, Steve. I had two SaaS businesses, both of which I exited. One in 2015, one in 2019. And so the world that I come from is I had 15 employees and Lord only knows how many 1099 working virtually from home. I actually did not have to work and I didn't for quite some time. But it was that like whole press a button, money comes in, everything's automated. I barely knew my employees' names. And that. The kind of guy that does that is the kind of guy that is going to have to be broken, right? Because my pride, my ego was just ridiculous. And so now I've kind of taken things the complete opposite direction to where I don't have any marketing. I don't do marketing funnels anymore. I was one of the best marketers on the planet, not tooting my own horn because I don't care. Right. But ask Ryan Dice, ask Russell Brunson, ask any of those guys, who's the top five copywriters in the world? They're going to mention my name. I don't do that anymore. I work one-on-one with guys. If somebody wants my help, they can hit me on Instagram and I'll talk to them and see what I can do for them.
I totally love that. And your Instagram, you mentioned it twice now,
Yeah.
Preston Ely, and that's with a Y at the end of
Yeah.
it.
ELY. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. So before I let you go, give us some words of encouragement. You know, I mean, that person that has hit the absolute rock bottom or the bottom below the bottom, that some of us know exactly what you mean by that. Let us know that there still is an up. That, I mean, maybe it's not the top of the mountain we believed in, but maybe there is something even better than that.
It's better than just it's better than better. It's better than there's some good to be found in this. It's like it's actually like you hit the freaking lottery. Are you at the have you been to the top, and do you feel like you're at the bottom, or do you feel empty, lost, lonely, confused, don't know what the heck to do, don't know why you feel the way you do, don't know why you're doing the things that you're doing, you wish you could stop doing them, you wish you could do this, and this, but you can't seem to do it, or you failed, or whatever. You are at the best place imaginable. You are in a safer, more blessed, more optimal, more like than 99% of the population, because that is where God can be found. And it's the only real thing. The pain comes from your attachment to a fake construct that this world calls success. That is the problem, and your ego attachment to that. And so the pain is coming from that whole system that is just unsustainable for 99% of the population, the human population, 90%, whatever the heck, you know. The pain is coming from just this whole unraveling, right? But the blessing that you just may not be there yet is you are going to be left standing with yourself, with the real you, with God. The only thing you're going to lose is stuff that was just barely real and it was hurting you. What have you lost, and you're regretting it? You're just like, it had to happen, man. It had to happen for you to get to where you are about to go. And you are about to go freaking, it's like outer space. Heaven.
Oh, I totally love that. So amazing. Wish we were going an hour instead of only going for 15 minutes or so. But
Some
we'll
other time.
have you back more. Again, it's Preston Eli with a Y. Preston, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, Steve.
If that didn't get you fired up, I guess I don't know how to, because that's the core of all of it. Knowing who you are, knowing what you're really meant to do, and then going out and making the impact in this world that you were meant to make. Not for some kind of scam or scheme or system, but because that is the heart and soul and core of who you are and what you must do in order to live as a thriving entrepreneur. With that said, let's do our first commercial break here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you, I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we talk about urgent clarity, about that stuff that you don't kind of hope you want to do, but that you know you must do. The way that you show up and make the impact and the difference in the world that you can make. got three great guests here. We're going to move into the second guest and talk about what she did when she made the pivot in her career to now do the things that she knows she's meant to do to serve this world and be a thriving entrepreneur. Let's listen in. Join me in welcoming Carrie Barrett. Hey, Carrie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing really good, thanks. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
How I show up in the world. Well, abridged version is I'm a mother of three. I have a 20-year background in broadcasting. I was a news anchor, finished my career at WNBC in New York City, and then launched a business about 5 years ago, teaching people how to communicate effectively on camera and also how to become their own publicist to generate media opportunities and visibility opportunities for their business.
And of course, it's like second nature to you to be on camera and those kind of things. But what are the kind of skills that a person needs to have to effectively be on camera?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of skills. And I always say that the competence comes before the confidence. A lot of people are very video averse or on camera averse. But really, the biggest mistake that I see people making is a lack of energy, meaning they don't really understand how the camera affects the way that they come across. So it takes a 3D person, puts them into a 2D atmosphere. You've got challenges when it comes to the hardware that you're talking through. So the microphone or the camera, and generally speaking, being on video or on camera has an energetically flattening effect. So that's one of the biggest mistakes. You really have to up your energy in order to come across as normal. It feels very awkward to most people. It feels very unnatural and forced. But if you watch yourself back, you will see that in fact, when you amp things up, and usually it's a good 25 to 30% for most people, you actually come across as passionate and interested and interesting when you are speaking. That is hands down the biggest mistake I see people making.
Well, that's so interesting. So when you listen to most people, and whether it's on video or podcasts or those kind of things, do you find yourself, getting that, oh, I wish I could just help them? I mean, do you have that kind of general, oh, if you could only do that kind of sense?
It's interesting. When I watch TV news, I definitely have that experience. I find myself yelling at the TV screen. I do. I come at this from a place where I understand how challenging it is for most people to be on camera. I used to be terrified of public speaking. And so I look at them with softness, but there are moments certainly when I hear somebody speaking and I want to be like, oh, you just need to shorten that up a little bit. Or if you just said this with a little more enthusiasm, you'd look like, you are very passionate about this. So yeah, I do find myself not yelling, but definitely seeing moments that could be improved upon.
Oh, I totally get that.
Yeah.
I know, and we started out the conversation with, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you show up in the world. And I've had people where, that's like a 20 or 30 minute conversation for them, just being able to show a little bit about who they are. And I'm like, man, if this is the short version.
Yeah. Sometimes people, we have a tendency when we're feeling insecure to want to continue talking. The reason is really twofold. Number one, it's we don't like the sound of silence, so we try and fill it with words. And if we're not exactly sure what somebody is looking for, or if we're feeling a little bit insecure about the content, we also have a tendency to want to keep sort of rattling on, for lack of a better word, because we feel like we need to show every single thing that we know in order to sound credible or to sound believable. So usually that is a habit that stems from a general uncomfortability with, whatever the situation is. In this particular case, of course, we're talking about speaking on camera.
I love that. Let's talk a little bit about filler words. I remember, especially back a decade ago now when the show started, I used to always be really conscious of, am I saying and, or words that don't really fit into the sentence?
Yeah.
What kind of freeing things can you tell us first? And then secondarily, how can we overcome that natural tendency to want to put in filler words?
Right. Well, unless you are using a filler word, every couple of, sentences, and I just used two of them myself, I said it twice. It is not a deal breaker. Using filler words is a natural idiosyncrasy of the way that we speak. I've never heard somebody say, "Oh my gosh, that speaker was amazing." They never said, Generally speaking, those are not the things that we are really focused on when we're listening. Again, unless it is distracting. If you find that you are using filler words, whatever, too often to the point where they are distracting, there's a couple of things that I suggest doing. Number one, it's recording yourself. And this goes for anything you're trying to get better on as, in terms of speaking on camera. You got to record yourself and watch back. Then pick a moment where you find you've used a lot of filler words. Let's say you're watching a Zoom call back again, or you're watching a client meeting back again. Pick a minute or two where there is a more frequent use of those filler words, and then go back and try and state that same thing again, but without using as many filler words. And keep refining and do that five times. And then listen to the way it sounds on that fifth time versus the first time. So, first of all, it's becoming aware. And then the next thing that I suggest is if you are finding that you're now aware of saying the filler word and you still have this sort of compulsion to say it, when you feel that word coming out, or you're sensing that you're going to fill with some sort of filler verbiage, take a second. And you know this sounds very easy, but it's harder than it sounds. Take a second, and I suggest doing something physical with your body. So some people will tap their leg a couple of times. Some people will, they're speaking on camera, look away from the camera for a moment. Do something physical that creates a connection in your body that recognizes this is a moment when I'm going to use a filler word, and use that physicality as a way to make yourself again a little more aware of when those words are about to come out. Usually, people will find that they have a tendency to use filler words in certain situations, again, where they're feeling uncomfortable, where they are trying to fill silence, where they are ad-libbing material that maybe they don't know quite as well as they would like to. Usually, you will find people use those words again in certain circumstances more than others.
And I apologize because I know that as soon as I brought up the concept, then you became more aware again of the fact of, am I using filler words?
Right. It works that way every time. As soon as I talk to a client about filler words, they find themselves saying, more often than not, it's almost as if it's we are acting in the way in which we're speaking. And I'm not saying this eloquently, but we're now more aware of it, and so we use them more.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think the most freeing thing for me was I was listening to, and I won't say him by name because people would probably know who he is, but I was listening to a nationally syndicated radio host that also is a fairly well-known television broadcast journalist. That's as far as I'll go. And over the course of the like 2 minutes that I was sitting there, I must have counted 50 times that he used filler words and just kept on going. And I was like, the secret behind it is more than anything, just being yourself and being comfortable being you. That was so freeing for me. I don't know if that frees anybody else up, but it really helped me anyway.
Yeah, well, and I think too, once you become aware of who you are on camera or who you are when you're speaking, and this part of it is going back and watching, it does become a lot easier. There is that initial resistance I find with a lot of people in the beginning. There is a resistance to, first of all, doing it, second of all, going back and watching. But once you get an idea of who your on camera persona is, or who your speaking persona is, then it becomes a little easier to just be yourself. And when you're able to relax and be yourself, you find that those words that occur when you're feeling uncomfortable naturally and organically begin to dissipate.
So let's talk about the kind of things that you help people with. Talk to us about your courses and your teachings and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking. I help business owners speak effectively on camera for a variety of different, and here I am using filler words again, for a variety of different scenarios, mostly, especially with the push right now for video on LinkedIn, it's being able to communicate effectively on camera for video content. And I have a 12-week program. I have an 8-week and a 12-week program that I take people through that gets them comfortable on camera, that helps them speak effectively, that helps them own their authority, that really helps them become thought leaders in the video space for their, especially social media content. And the variation between the 8 to 12 weeks really just depends on where they're coming to me in terms of their skill set. There are some people that don't need 12 weeks, and there's some people who need more than 12 weeks, and then we'll schedule some one-off sessions afterward. I also have a PR program. And when I say PR, I'm not talking about crisis communications, but I'm talking about a way to help business owners scale visibility, credibility, and authority in front of new audiences. I'm not talking about corporate communications or anything like that, but rather how do you land yourself on CNBC or on Forbes or on podcasts. So it's a program that teaches business owners how to pitch themselves and how to show up and how to get their messaging where they want it and how to understand the media.
Absolutely love it. So what does it take to work with you? Do you work with anybody? Do they have to be at a certain level?
I work with small business owners. Generally speaking, they're usually about, I find, anywhere from 3 to 5 years in business, but really the only requirement is that you have a desire to either appear on camera speaking for any number of reasons, or you have a desire to learn how to get your business or your personal brand in front of the media.
That's amazing. And where would a person go to find out more about you and sign up to work with you?
The easiest place to go is LinkedIn. I post helpful content on that platform every single day. So it's the best way to learn from me before you work with me directly. And then I have resources and links, and you can schedule a free consultation call with me through my LinkedIn profile as well.
Perfect. Well, before I let you go, after we've scared everybody and now they're going to be thinking all day long whether they're using filler words and if they're ready for being on camera and all those kind of things, give us some words of encouragement and empower us just how capable each of us is to be able to show up powerfully on camera.
Oh, listen, I could talk about this for days. I will share this story with you. I used to be absolutely terrible and terrified, not just of being seen on camera or speaking, but really being in the world and being seen. And so I know that if I can overcome it, I absolutely have no doubt that anybody who wants to learn this skill set, anybody who wants to be able to speak on camera to promote themselves or their business can absolutely learn how to do it. I know it is terrifying when you first start, but the truth of the matter is it really is all about being your authentic self. You just got to learn how to do that on camera. And I promise you can do it.
I love that. Well, Carrie, thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Be your own publicist. Show up. Be on camera. Be the you. Have that sense of urgent clarity to make the impact, to do the stuff so that you can be the change you need to be in this world and you can live as a thriving entrepreneur. Let's do one more commercial break and we'll be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Don't go away. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you, I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we talk about urgent clarity. We've looked at some ways that people do it, some things that you need to know in order to be able to have your urgent clarity. And now we want to look at a gentleman who has some opportunities that he saw and became urgent clarity for him. Let's listen in. Join me in welcoming Bruce Talley. Hey, Bruce, how are you doing today?
Great. Thanks.
Thanks so much for being here with us. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the opportunity. So my background is I worked in American capital markets in the bond market in California for many years. California has a large number of municipal bond issuers. The company I worked for bought, sold, traded. And I worked there for a long time, eventually led West Coast sales. I had a career change. I had this idea that the Russian Federation was going to maybe democratize and open up its economy in the way that I think the Czech Republic has probably done a good job, and Poland maybe. So I went over to Russia. I lived in Russia for almost 10 years. I did several things there. I bought and sold commercial land in Krasnodar Krai, Krasnodar region, which is the region of Russia that is just east of the Black Sea. Then I was working on some development issues with a tiny de facto independent country called Abkhazia that separated from Georgia in the early 1990s, kind of got stonewalled by their Russian patrons who were both encouraging me and putting barriers up unseen to me. And I shifted back across the border and I built a destination management company, which became the largest in Sochi. In fact, it was one of the larger employers in Sochi for the roughly 3-year period leading up to the 2014 Winter Games. So we provided complete workforce relocation solutions. We did TV studios, offices, staffing, interpreters, transportation teams, laundry, you name it, we did it. And I shifted and did that in some subsequent games. I moved my team down to Brazil. Since early 2022, I have been working, doing a couple things really. I started out taking trauma kits to Ukraine. I knew Ukraine fairly well from my time in Russia, traveling there quite a few times. And I speak Russian well enough to get by wherever I am in the Russian speaking world. So started out taking trauma kits and, you know, medical equipment over there. And I've since gotten involved in the reconstruction issues and moving towards, you know, bringing investors. I've brought investors in. I have a destination management company there for the companies that will eventually relocate and bring in their workforces and start up factories and so forth. So Ukraine is occupying front and center. It's a personal issue for us. We feel very strongly about Ukrainian sovereignty. And I know my answer is running along here, but my wife and I both feel strongly about Ukrainian sovereignty. She's Russian, but opposes what they're doing there quite vociferously, as do I. And, you know, so there's a humanitarian aspect. There's the opportunity to help Ukraine grow and fulfill its economic potential. And then there's an opportunity for me and for investors and technology companies, builders to go over there and participate.
And so what kind of things are you hoping that people listening to the interview are wanting to get involved with and can do to work alongside of you or that you can help them with?
Well, I'll give you an example. I have a modular building company that wants to set up a factory in Ukraine. So we can help them soup to nuts. We're looking at potential locations for their factory. They're already doing, have had some contracts that they fulfilled over there. So we can help them find their location and, you know, write the contract and help them with building permits and bringing in their workers, you know, workforce relocation, complete with financial management, help them with work permits, you know, staffing. We can find the employees and pay them, you know, pay their salaries and taxes for them. So we can do all that. But I'm also, in addition to that destination management, I'm also bringing in companies that maybe aren't initially looking for those kinds of services, but maybe they want to invest. Maybe they want to bring their technology in. I took several technology companies over in November, two signed contracts, an AI company and a company with a platform that is to be utilized by Ukrainian cities for, you know, communication and for buying services like waste management in a transparent fashion. So really it's, you know, it's a couple of things. It absolutely is not related to a particular industry. Obviously, construction and infrastructure and those kinds of issues are going to be front and center, but there are all kinds of ways to participate. And I think the Ukrainians strongly believe that Ukraine has a future as a manufacturing hub for Europe because their costs are so much lower. You know, the employee costs, land costs, all these costs are so much less than they are in the European Union. And so I foresee initially a lot of folks will be interested in participating in the reconstruction. There's so many buildings, so much infrastructure that needs to be rebuilt around the country. And then there's legacy buildings and infrastructure that really, predated what has happened in the last 3 years, but really needs to be replaced. So there's all that. I think that's going to be a kind of initial wave, but I think the really long-term effect will be that a lot of companies will be locating their manufacturing facilities, especially in Western Ukraine, close to Poland. And I foresee that you'll see in a decade that people will be talking about it much the way they talk about the Tijuana border region now, which has got, I think, 1,200 maquiladoras working. So,
absolutely love that. So, what kind of companies is this best for? What kind of people that are listening would be the right ones to want to connect with you?
Well, you know, it's, I'm sorry to be so vague, but anybody that's interested in expanding their business and wants to manufacture to sell into Europe, or that believes that their technology, their products can be used in Ukraine. So we see a lot of modular companies are looking at getting involved. Modular construction can be used for big hotels and apartment buildings, single family homes, for the kiosks at markets, for schools. You know, you have different kinds of modular construction, right? And it's growing worldwide, whether you're talking about wooden modular construction in a factory or cargo containers or, you know, some other, modular construction. So I think that's a big part of it. I think companies that have really good experience with concrete, that know what they're doing, because I'm told the technology, the concrete products that are produced in Ukraine are very expensive. Technology is old and it's not as good quality. And of course, you have water systems that don't serve, even before all the war damage, that didn't serve much of the population. There's something like 20% of the population on farms and small villages don't have running water to their homes. And I believe that, and I know people in the Ukrainian Water Association believe that there's going to be a lot of work done on that. So, you know, you've got everything around infrastructure, bridges, you've got, you know, smart buildings. That's a big issue. So that people living in their homes can be you know, informed and warned, and also agriculture. Ukraine has 25% of the world's black earth, which is the best soil. And at the present time, foreigners aren't allowed to purchase Ukrainian agricultural land, but I believe that there's very good hope that that will change. And prices are very depressed in comparison with Poland. And again, it's some of the best, very best agricultural land in the world. And you're going to, I think you'll see companies that have technology around agriculture, whether it's the, you know, the inputs, whether it's the equipment, all that technology, all that knowledge is going to be useful, I think, in Ukraine. And then and another thing I'd like to impress upon your listeners is that Ukraine is incredibly, in my estimation, pro-American right now. The administration has done a great job of supporting. Yes, everybody wishes they had done more or could have done more, but that support is has been crucial to keeping Ukrainian lives alive, keeping Ukrainians alive, and to taking care of the heroes that are fighting and dying in the field every day. So I hope that the United States will continue to support Ukraine as best we can. And, you know, I think it's important for everybody really, but yeah, anyway, it's a very unique atmosphere as an American to go into at the present time. Ukrainians are very positive about, the United States and about Americans.
And so if somebody wants to work with you, where can they go? What's your URL, that kind of thing?
Well, you know, we have destination-ukraine.com. And of course they can reach me there. You can reach me on my email, telephone. So, you know, I can give that to you as well.
Well, perfect. Well, Bruce, I appreciate all you're doing for the people of Ukraine and in the country, and I hope you all the best of success. Thanks for so much for being a guest here on the show today.
Yeah, I would like to, you know, share a couple stories with you if you've got a moment.
If they're quick stories, sure.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we talked about one of the reasons that I am so concerned about Ukrainian sovereignty is, of course, I lived in the Russian Federation for a long time. And I spent about, of the nearly 10 years that I lived there, I spent about 5 years being constantly sort of tailed, questioned, interrogated by the FSB, which is a rebranded KGB. And so, you know, this has given me a very strong feeling about personal freedoms and oppression from the authorities. And so, you know, just a quick story to add to this. During the Olympic Games, we were providing long-term workforce solutions and offices and, you know, television studios. And so at one point I had a sports program came over and they wanted to interview me for their, one of their segments. And I got a lot of attention from the media. I was interviewed very, very regularly. And so this wasn't unusual, but it was about 4 months before the 5 months before the games. And I was super busy. I worked 364 days that year. And so they sent a couple of their producers over. And we drove around. I showed them the areas, the mountain cluster and the coastal cluster where the games were going to be held. And I told them some stories about corruption that I had heard of. And you know, that every time you think you've gotten to the bottom on that kind of venality and corruption in Russia, the bottom would drop out on you. It just seemed that there was no bottom. So I told them these stories, but I made it really clear that, look, this is stuff, I'm not going to talk about this on television. I've got a family. I've got contracts. I don't want to get killed. I don't want to disappear. I don't want to be kicked out of the country. and it's, you know, it's not the appropriate time for muckraking. So anyway, the journalists came over and they wanted to do the story. They wanted to interview me in front of the Olympic Park. So there was a new small hotel that had been built right across the fence from the speed skating arena. And I suggested that I called the owner up and I said, we were trying to place one of the sponsors in that hotel for a 3-month period. And I suggested to, or asked the owner, can we interview, do this interview on the fifth floor of your hotel? And he said, sure. So we went down there. And the journalist asked me some questions that, you know, on the record that I wasn't prepared to answer. And I made that clear. He got mad at his producers and yelled and jumped up and down a few times. And, you know, eventually the interview was kind of cut short, and that was that. And it was too bad because there are a lot of other stories that we could talk about in Sochi at that time. But so I got back to my office, and the FSB officer that was around me very, very often called me up. He said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I guess I'm having tea downstairs in the cafe with you in about 5 minutes. So we met, and he said, what's going on? I said, well, I was kind of upset. I wasted a couple of days that I really didn't have on these folks. And, they asked me some questions about corruption that I couldn't answer. And this was what was really fascinating about this was he said, well, you should have just pushed the guy off. Now, we'd done the interview on the fifth floor of this hotel, but I hadn't disclosed this. I just said, well, I got interviewed down by the Olympic Park. So I think most people's default on this would be, oh, they interviewed me in front of the Olympic Park. You're going to imagine me standing on the ground. So he said, why didn't you just push him off? Well, of course, I didn't take that particularly seriously, but he knew already that we were on the fifth floor of this hotel. So this was how close that they were monitoring me. I don't know whether it was the owner of the hotel or the Russian film camera crew that was accompanying this journalist, but that was the kind of thing that happened. They were all over me for years and years and years. So,
well, Bruce, I appreciate the story, and thank you so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great rest of your day.
You bet.
How urgent is your clarity? How clear is your clarity? How well do you know who you are and what you're meant to do in this world? That's where it starts. You've got to have that clarity that goes along with the urgency. And then when you have that clarity, you've got to let the two of those work together in an urgently clear way to make an impact that you are meant to make. Because you are uniquely brilliant. You were created for a purpose, and the world needs you. We need you to be clear about who you are. We need you to be urgent with whatever it is you do. It doesn't matter whether you, like our last guest, have found great business opportunities in a country that's expanding, or whether, like our first guest, you've done everything and you came to realize what's truly important in the world. Because you've got to take that first step first, just like that's why that was the first guest today, to be able to then be able to see all of the things that are the ways that you can show up and live as a thriving entrepreneur. Oh, I want that for you. And I know that you need it. Be urgently clear today and live as a thriving entrepreneur. I hope you have a great week.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third-generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. go to asksstevekid.com and schedule a time to talk today.